Hello and welcome to episode 48 of the Epic Classroom Podcast. My name is Trevor Muir and I like to talk about teaching, whether it's stories and ideas from my own classrooms or lessons that I've learned from other educators. I just love to explore ways to help students grow and thrive in school, but also for their educators to thrive as well. And so that's what this podcast is. Whatever you teach or however you serve in schools, how can you lead a more impactful, dynamic, meaningful, and epic classroom? All right. Hi, everybody. The Ides of March are upon us. It is almost spring break season for a lot of people out there. And so why don't we just start with that? If you are an educator about to go on spring break, or maybe you're on spring break, maybe you're laying on a beach right now and you got your earbuds in and you are for some reason listening to this podcast, whatever you're doing right now, I hope that you get a chance to rest and recuperate in the middle of this winter spring season. I say winter because where I live in Michigan, it's snowing out as I look outside and see it just coming down. So it's like, I don't know, maybe it's still winter, maybe it's spring, but whatever it is, hopefully you're getting a chance to take a little break pretty soon, or maybe you're on it right now, and I hope it gives you a little bit of life, because you know, like the winter spring semester, it can feel like a really long time, and then after spring break, there isn't really a whole lot of breaks until summer, and so you just got to take advantage of it when it's in front of you here. And so I hope you're getting to do that. I hope you're also allowing students a chance to do that as well. I don't know. You do what you need to do. I have always had a policy that I don't like to give students work over breaks like this, because breaks are supposed to be breaks. They're supposed to be time to refresh and maybe even not think about school. You know what? I'll even give you permission to do this. If you're on spring break and you're listening to this podcast to hopefully get some ideas or inspiration, be a better teacher, you know what? Feel free to turn it off and listen to an audio book. I'm just kidding. Keep listening to the podcast. I'm just saying we all need breaks, and students do as well. And I think that's what spring break is supposed to be. It's supposed to be this little hiatus, this pause button, so that we can kind of fill up our batteries a bit, so that when we return, we've got what's necessary to get through the rest of the year. And so I hope you are getting a chance to rest soon. I wanted to tell a couple stories. And I wanted to start with when I got right out of college. So listen to this story, and however you want to put the dots together, however you want to connect it, that is up to you. But I just want to share a little story with you. When I went to college, I think I shared this in just a few podcast episodes ago, I was a creative writing major, mostly because I liked to write, and it was the only thing I was ever good at in school. And so I was like, well, if I can get a creative writing major and get a degree and do that, I'll figure out what I'm going to do next. But then along the way, I discovered I wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to help other students fall in love with reading and writing and some of the other things that I was actually inspired by. And so when I graduated with my bachelor's degree, I had this creative writing major, but I didn't have a teaching degree. And I grew up in Florida. I went to Florida State University, but right after college, I moved to Michigan with my new bride. And it turns out in Michigan, you have to have a teaching certificate and there has to be a degree that supports it. And so I had to go back to school and get my teaching certificate. But because I was now out into the quote unquote real world, and I already had my bachelor's degree taken care of, I had to figure out a way to pay for all of it. And I didn't want to go into more debt. And I didn't have any parental support or grandparent support to help me get my teaching certificate. And so I had to figure out how I was going to pay for it. And so the very first thing I did, or one of the first things I did when I got up here to Grand Rapids, Michigan, was enroll at a teaching college where I would take classes at night and during the day to pay for it. I think it was the second job I got when I moved up here. I worked for a liquidation company doing business development. And essentially what liquidation is when a company goes out of business, so that they failed, my job was to contact their business so that we could come in, the company I was working for could come in and buy all of their assets, everything that they worked for and built up and earned and had a business working with, but then the business failed. We would offer to go in and buy all their assets and then go and sell them to someone else, someone who wasn't in the act of failing. So basically what 23-year-old Trevor had to do was sit down at a desk all day long, and I had to cold call. I had to pick up the phone and just look at I would Google and find out where businesses were failing, and I would find out who their CEO or their CFO, their chief financial officer was, and I would call them, and I would say, "Hi, I know your life's work is disappearing right before your eyes, but I would like to come and buy all your stuff so we can resell it to somebody else." And it was really uplifting work. Ugh. I mean, this task was daunting. Like, I would sit down, and I don't even know why I got this job. It was through a family friend, a connection, and I needed money, and I really needed to pay for my teaching degree. I knew this was something I wanted. I needed to do, but to go to school at night and work full-time and get a master's degree, that cost a lot of money. And so I took this job, and I'd sit at this desk, and I would be absolutely mortified of my work. I remember just thinking, like, before going in, like, I hate this. I hate calling people that are, like, sad. You know, it was daunting. For the first few weeks, I would stare at the phone at my desk, and I just prayed that these failing companies would just somehow call me and offer me their business. You know, like, I knew that the people that I was calling would not be happy hearing from me, right? Like, in the midst of all of their bankruptcy struggles and having to let go of their employees, I felt like I was some type of, like, bottom feeder or scavenger just waiting to take advantage of the kill. And not to mention, you know, these were professionals who often led multi-million dollar companies, and I'm just this 23-year-old who, like, a year prior to this was sitting in a creative writing class at Florida State University. And I was just so afraid of bothering these people. And I felt so inadequate of this job, right? Like, I felt so inadequate to pick up the phone and make these phone calls. And I was failing at it. You know, my reaction to this fear that I had, you know, to find excuses to make less calls and contact less people, my fear of doing this was I didn't do it. I would often sit there and I would just research and find the companies that was failing, but I would not make the phone calls, or I would send emails so I didn't have to deal with the actual people. And it was, the result of it is really dismal performance, right? It did not go very good for me. I had very little productivity for this company that hired me. And, you know, upon seeing my dismal performance, my boss, after only just a few weeks of this, he called me into his office and he said, "Hey, when I interviewed you, you said that you were comfortable on the phone," which I said, yeah, I do remember saying that in the interview, but I guess I didn't really realize at the time that I was calling people with failing businesses. I didn't realize I was calling CEOs, but he said, "I'm looking and I see your numbers are really low. I want to know what's going on with you, Trevor. What is happening? Why aren't you being successful?" Something like that. I mean, he saw how poor I was doing at my job, and I was expecting him to fire me, you know, because, like, what I said to him, I was like, "Well, I'm nervous and I'm scared of disappointing people and I'm scared of bothering people and it's getting in the way of me making these phone calls." And I'm saying all this to him and I'm like, "Oh, he's just going to fire me right here," right? Like, I only got this job for a few weeks and now I'm going to go have to find another job that pays enough for me to get my teaching certificate. And so I've got all these fears spinning around, and my boss, his name is Bill. Hey, Bill, I don't know why you'd be listening to this. You run a liquidation company. But if you happen to listen to teacher podcasts, hey, Bill. Bill said to me, "Trevor, I want to tell you something." And it's just as clear as day what he said. He said, "Trevor, when you call these companies, you aren't bothering them." And I remember him saying that. And I'm like, "Yeah, I am. Because I'm a 23-year-old twerp who knows nothing about the real world, and I'm calling them and making them have to face their failure and saying and making them recognize it, and I'm thinking all this." And he says, "No, you are not bothering these companies. What you're doing is you're offering them something that they need. They need a good company to help them during this difficult time that they're in. And here's the truth: we are a good company. We've got a great sales staff. We've got strong customer service, and everyone here is honest. And he said to me, he's like, you need to know this. When you call, you aren't bothering them. You're serving them. You're giving them something that they need during a really difficult time. And I tell you what, he said this to me, and it was like a light bulb was going off. This advice that he gave me had this major impact on my performance with that company. I mean, like, the truth is, making cold calls was still a challenging task. I think it is for anybody. But the thing is I started approaching that work with a new mindset. You know, by centering the task, this difficult task, on something that mattered, like on this act of service, I was able to overcome the hurdles of the difficult work. You know, my low productivity, it didn't come from my inability to communicate. That's something I knew how to do. It came from my resistance to doing something that didn't make sense to me. I thought that I was making a mistake when I called these companies. I thought I was a bother. But what Bill said to me was like, actually, no, you are serving them. We're a good company. And so when you reach out to people, you are serving them. And this did something to me. This knowledge now that I'm actually in the act of service while I'm making money. I'm in the act of service while I'm doing these tasks. I'm in the act of service while doing this difficult thing that made me do the difficult thing better. You know, regardless of the task, people want to know that the work they're doing is serving something bigger than themselves. I know that was so true in my life, and it's probably true in yours as well. As a teacher, as an administrator, as a counselor, as a parapro, whatever you do, the truth is we thrive on purpose. You know, even though my work with that company was largely based on success, there was this correlation between the number of calls I made and the money I earned. Like, there was clearly that motivating me, which I think is good. Like, we want to be motivated by external factors. This wasn't enough for me in that moment to work as an incentive to pick up the phone and call these failing businesses. But then when I learned that there was a correlation between the number of calls I made and the impact that I could have on others, this motivated harder and stronger work. It made me a better employee. So what am I getting at here? What's the point of saying this? I think we have to realize that understanding the big picture of our work motivates better work. Like, that's just the truth of it. Knowing that our work matters motivates us to do it better. And this is true as professionals, but this is also true for students. When we can help them understand, or if we can help them metabolize what the purpose of their work is, when we can help them see what the big picture is and how it's serving something bigger than just themselves, when we can do that, it actually can have a huge impact on the way that they engage in their work. And this is counter to what a lot of people see in today's generation, that they are capable of doing hard tasks, daunting tasks, challenging tasks, boring tasks, menial tasks, right? They're Generation Z, let's just talk about that generation for a minute. Generation Z is often branded as lazy and flaky, right? It's a common sentiment that young people these days are not reliable and they need to be coddled and they don't know the meaning of hard work, right? Like, it would be very easy, and I'm not Gen Z, I'm an older millennial, but like, it'd be very easy for my boss at that time to look at me and be like, ugh, this guy's sitting at his desk not picking up the phone, he's just part of the younger generation. He doesn't know how to do hard tasks. He doesn't know how to do menial tasks or tasks that he doesn't like. He's unreliable in that way. It'd be very easy to slap that label on me. And listen, I understand where some of these labels come from. You know, you look at this, you look at Generation Z, and you look at even just workforce data. You know, there is, like, I saw recently 72% of young professionals who are in that Gen Z generation, so like early 20s, 72% of them plan to quit their jobs and move to something else this year, right? Like, 59% of Generation Z reports being unsatisfied in their chosen careers. And I look at that, I'm like, is this a sign of the times? Are they incapable of hard work? Are they unwilling to just stick with something? Do they not have the ability to see something through? Is it a generational issue? Or talk to teachers, right? Like so many teachers report on this massive spike in apathy and lowered engagement and students not engaging enough and academics going down and students not being willing to sit still and actually do hard work and all that goes with school sometimes. It's like, is that because of the generation or is it something else? And I would say it's like, well, maybe a little bit of both. But I think, and this is just my, maybe this is my unsolicited opinion here, although it's kind of solicited because you're listening to the podcast. My opinion is that this generation is often branded this way because this generation is being raised up too often in the same way that previous generations were. The expectation that, hey, you're doing this work because that's how you get your paycheck. Or you're doing this job because that's what you're supposed to do. Or that's your duty. Or that's the way it's supposed to be. You work, you get paid, you go home, and then you do it all over again. You go to school, you do listen to the teacher, you memorize for the test, you do well on the test, and then you move on to the next unit. Right? That's the way it's been done for a lot of people. And it worked for some and it did not work for others, but that's how it's been done. And now it turns out that same method is not working on this current generation. Some of the motivators in school, like grades or get to the next level, is not working with students anymore. Instead, there needs to be more to motivate them. And, you know, if you dive into the research on it, so much of Generation Z, kids these days, they want to know that the work they're doing is bigger than just a paycheck. And I know for my generation and beyond, that's sometimes a head scratcher. You're like, what are you talking about? Like, no, you got to just work. That's what you do. Like that's your role in society is just to go and put out your effort and get paid for it and find ways to be happy in the midst of it. But that's just what you do. But that mentality just doesn't seem to be working anymore. We have to find other ways to motivate students because they want to know that there's a big picture. They want to know that their work matters in the world. You know, it's so interesting. I was at a school yesterday working with teachers there and it was a STEM program. So it was a 10th grade STEM program. And, you know, they've got these students who are doing really advanced science and math. It's kind of an accelerated program. And so these students are learning the academic content at a very deep level. And it's working for them in that matter. The teachers are like, oh yeah, these students are really doing well with student achievement. They're going to go to college. They're doing well in their testing and all this. But we are just seeing over and over, particularly with this group of students, that they just don't have the collaboration skills, the problem-solving skills, the communication skills that they absolutely need to thrive in their career and life and society after school. The academic is fine, but this other stuff is lacking so much. And often when these teachers said when they give these type of projects like that include collaboration and critical thinking and problem solving, students are super apathetic to that type of work. They often say, well, can't we just solve the problems and move on? Or can I just go and do the work in my textbook and not have to talk to other people in class? Like, and it'd be very easy to just say, oh, there it is again, right? Here's another type of example of student apathy, you know, and I know there's much more extreme examples of student apathy, like kids not showing up to school or not turning in work or turning in substandard work or cheating. But this form of apathy is prevalent as well as students not engaging in work that's challenging, right? To a lot of these excelling academic students, the work of collaborating and working with other people, that is the real challenge. And so they're apathetic to that work. And so I asked these teachers, I said, what are you finding does work with these students? Where have you seen growth happen? And they told me all about this big thing that they're doing called the SOAP Project. And essentially, as these students are learning chemistry and science and math, and they're learning this content, they're simultaneously going to a lab in the school and they're making soap. So they're learning the principles of chemistry and they're making soap with different supplies and they're finding ways to sell this soap. And so they're doing all of this work in Algebra 2 to have loss projections and profit projections and creating graphs. And they're doing all of this math and science to create and sell soap within their community. And they're taking some of their profits and they're doing all this philanthropy work. They're giving soap away. They're making sure homeless shelters are getting soap and they're giving it to people who might not be able to afford good good quality soap that doesn't hurt the environment. And they're finding all these ways to take the math and science to do this work in our community. And they and these teachers walked me through what they're doing and how they're tying it into the math and science. But there's also this part where it's like, yeah, part of this is just we're learning how to work together to solve a big problem. And it's working. It was like this light bulb went off for me. It's like, yeah, you know what? Clearly, the generation labels that we sometimes slap on kids are not actually accurate. These kids in this program are not being lazy. They're not incapable of hard work. They're not incapable of doing hard menial tasks because here they are doing it. Not only are they learning complex science and math, they are taking those skills and they're doing work that matters. And these teachers do such a brilliant job of helping them see that, like, hey, the work you're doing matters right now. And it turns out when students know that the work they're doing matters, it affects the way that they engage. Now, is this all to say that everything students need to do in school and then someday when they get into the workforce, it all has to change the world? It all has to have this deep underlying purpose? No, I don't think so. I think sometimes it's difficult to mine all of the purpose within a task and have to articulate it. Sometimes you have to do something because that's what you have to do. But that being said, I don't think everything has to change the world and be this life-shattering experience, especially in school. But I do think everything we give to students should matter in some way. I think it's really important, especially with this generation of students and beyond. Maybe it would have even meant more to our own generations. I do think we should find ways to articulate the purpose of the work we're giving. I do think it should all matter in some way. Otherwise, what's the point of it? If there's not purpose to learning a certain set of content or having students engage in a certain skill, then what's the point of it? Why are we spending our time planning it? Why are we spending students' time giving them this work if it doesn't actually matter? And so I think if we can sum up, and I know I'm rambling a little bit here, I'm following an outline, but I'm also just kind of thinking on the spot, like what do we do then as educators? What do we do with this fact that this current generation of students want to know that the work they do matters? It has purpose behind it. There's lots of research that shows that young people who know what they do matters in the workplace, that they stick with their jobs longer, that this work means something to them. I work with new teachers all the time, and part of my work for them is helping them articulate, understand that, hey, the work you're doing doesn't always provide fruit in the moment, but it will pay off. That it does make a difference over time. And when teachers understand that, when young teachers understand that, it turns out it helps them stay in the classroom longer. It helps them thrive and do better work when they're actually there. And so this works for us professionals. We know that when we are doing work that matters, we stick with it and we do it better. I think it's the same for students. In fact, there's research on service learning that shows that when students are doing work that matters to them, but it's also it's servicing something bigger than themselves, when it does that, but they're also learning content at the same time, it has a measurable impact on their collaborative development, their social development, their behavioral development, their emotional development, but also their cognitive development. Students learn more when they're learning for a good reason. And this principle applies across the board. And so maybe today, ask the question, what is the big picture behind your work? And then ask, how can I help my students see the big picture behind the work that they are doing as well? Because that matters. And I'll tell you what, I did not stick with the liquidation career. When I got my teaching certificate, I said farewell to that difficult job of calling people whose businesses were failing. And I was not sad about that. But I took those principles with me, and it's something that I hold on to this day, and I try to help students do as well. And so maybe that's something you can chew on today. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. I can't believe it's almost been 50 of these podcasts so far. If you enjoy listening to it, I would encourage you to go back and listen to past episodes. I try to keep them timely. And so feel free to listen to those. Feel free to pass it on to others. If you want to engage with any of the other work that I do in schools and with teachers, you can go check out my website, trevormuir.com, where you can learn about the books I've written about teaching, watch my videos, read my blog posts, look at my resources, tons of stuff out there. I just love starting good conversation. And so thanks for being a part of this one. Talk to you next time. My name is Trevor Muir, and this is the Epic Classroom Podcast.